If you listen to Heritage Radio Network, then chances are you know exactly who Michael Pollan is. Author of such books as In Defense of Food and The Omnivore's Dilemma, Michael Pollan is a leading authority in the food revolution. On an interview with Patrick Martins, Michael Pollan offered some suggestions about mindful eating.
Try to shorten your food chain to the point where you have a pretty good idea where your food came from, where it was grown, and who produced it. In general, when you do that, you're not going to be eating processed food, and you're probably going to be eating in season as well. And there are a lot of reasons to do that. Some are environmental, some are social, and some probably connect to health.
Americans have allowed meat to become the star of the meal. Michael Pollan doesn't think it makes any sense, and here's why.
We're all eating too much meat in America. I mean, we eat 9 ounces of meat per person per day. And if you eat meat, you're making up for the vegetarians who aren't eating any. The problem with that is, well, there's an environmental problem. The world can't support a population of 7 billion eating that much meat. There just isn't enough land to grow the feed for it. But there's nothing wrong with eating meat. I eat meat. I try not to eat it every day. And I think the key is to kind of put it back in its place as an element in the meal and not this giant centerpiece of the plate. So I find if you're serving yourself, we typically put the meat on first and then we surround it with vegetables. If you serve yourself vegetables first, you will invariably take more vegetables and then have less room for meat. And that serves, I think, several goals.
Pollan makes a compelling case for cooking one meal, not a selection of options that cater to a selection of tastes.
The habit of eating what is served is in trouble in America, and we're all taking kind of a restaurant approach to the meal. That's not such a good thing. I mean, I think there's a real virtue in people sharing the same food at the same time. It kind of puts everybody on the same emotional page or psychological page. Also, if you cater to your kids, you're just going to get pickier and pickier eaters. And, you know, I say this having learned by screwing it up. I mean, I had a very picky eater who we custom cooked to in various ways, and I realized it was probably a mistake. When you're getting exactly what you want, when you get what you ordered, you will eat more. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you eat what is served, you're more likely to eat a reasonable amount. The ideal, I think, is to make one thing for everybody, and then it's kind of take it or leave it. The whole food industry is trying to encourage us in another direction, though. You know, you go to the supermarket, and they have home meal replacements, as they call them in the industry, for every member of the family. You know, you can get the vegan entree for the teenage girl who's experimenting with that dietary pattern, and then you can get the manhandler for the father with a pound of meat in it, and then you can get the Weight Watchers for the woman if that's what she wants, and then the frozen pizza for the boy. They're trying to divide us into market segments and thereby get us to eat more food. So I say, like, let's share.
Nutritional information can be confusing and thus make us very anxious about our food and health.
Basically, we've been obsessing about nutrients and getting the right nutrients and avoiding the wrong nutrients for decades in this country. And as it happens, that obsession coincides with the obesity epidemic. Worrying too much about food isn't good for your health either, especially when you end up worrying about the wrong thing, which has often been the case because the science has changed and the science sometimes gets it wrong. The problem is that the anxiety about food that's kind of fostered by changing science and industry using, you know, the latest science to market their foods, just leads to people losing focus on things like eating a meal. And as soon as you start thinking in terms of nutrients, people start binging on the good nutrients, even as they're avoiding the bad nutrients. So, for example, when we demonized fat, you know, with the whole low-fat craze, people binged on carbohydrates. I'm kind of suggesting people try to cultivate a more relaxed attitude toward food. And as long as they're eating real food and they're doing it at meals, which is a very important institution that's in trouble, they don't have to worry about nutrients.
Can sustainable agriculture feed the world? Michael Pollan wonders.
Can you feed the world sustainably if the world population is going up to 9 billion? The honest answer is we don't know, but a couple of things we do know that are helpful in thinking through that problem. First is the industrial system is not succeeding in feeding 7 billion people. You know, there are 1 million people who are going to bed hungry in this world, and we have plenty of food. So the issue is not simply a matter of yield or quantity of food. You know, how the food is distributed, who has the ability to command the food, is just as important as how many bushels of corn you can get off an acre of land. I would also add that there are some recent studies that strongly suggest that sustainable agriculture could feed a population of 9 billion. You know, most of the world is growing food at very low yields right now. If Africa, for example, could simply bring yields up to where organic agriculture is in the United States or Europe, there would be more food by an order of magnitude. I mean, I have seen small farms that are far more productive than industrial farms. They tend, however, to be labor-intensive. And I think the real limiting factor is not what the land can do in a small space or a large space. The limiting factor is, do we have enough farmers on the land? And that's where I think the developing world potentially has an edge. I actually think that the really creative, polycultural, sustainable farms are better suited in some ways to Africa or to India, because there still are more people on the land than they are to America. You know, we only have 1.5 million farmers. China still has 700 million farmers. The other point I would make is that there's a lot of play in the system we have now. I mean, meat eating is one example. I mean, half the grain we grow is going to feed animals. So if we cut down on meat eating, we could feed a lot more people on current yields. And lastly, we're wasting a lot of food. We're wasting about 25% of the food we grow right now at every level, beginning on the farm and going right to your, you know, what's in your refrigerator right now. So there are ways we could use the food we're already growing to feed a lot more people than we are.
Lastly, Pollan makes the obvious but seemingly invisible point that basic culinary literacy is lacking in large segments of our society.
The gradual decline and collapse of cooking as something that happens most days in most people's houses has had a profound effect on our health. I mean, people are eating fast food, and we know what fast food does to people. Basically, when you outsource the cooking of your food to corporations, your health suffers because they tend to cook with far too much salt, fat, and sugar, because those are really cheap ingredients that turn us on, and they're going to use as much of them as they can to sell food that doesn't cost them much to produce. We have research that shows that there is a correlation between whether you cook at home and the quality of your diet. It doesn't matter what you're cooking. You can cook your own junk food, and it's going to be better than the junk food you would buy. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a really important part of the equation, and I also think that local food and CSAs and farmers markets, these great new institutions that are growing like crazy, the limiting factor, I think, is going to be that people don't cook. You need to be able to cook to take full advantage of a local food system. I also think it has important social implications, too. We know families that enjoy a family dinner are healthy by many other measures, including mental health, including, kids' drug use and performance in school. All these things go together. The family meal is one of the great civilizing and socializing institutions of our society, and we're treating it cavalierly. I mean, people are moving away from meals to grazing on snacks, Something like 60% of the breakfast cereal is no longer eaten at breakfast. College kids are eating it all day long.
If you want to hear more from Michael Pollan, check out episode 124 of The Main Course. The Main Course airs live every Sunday at 12 p.m. This piece was brought to you by White Oak Pastures. For more information, visit whiteoakpastures.com. Produced and edited by Jack Inslee for HeritageRadioNetwork.org.